Welcome to the Visual Storytelling Podcast. My name is Fred Ranger, and I'm so happy that you're joining us today for another inspirational conversation. Today, I have a very special guest. His name is Tyson Martin, and he is a photographer out west in Canada, so fellow Canadian photographer. He's also the creator of the Life of Feist podcast, which actually I happen to have been on, and this is a great collaboration, and I want to welcome you, Tyson, to the show. Please give us a little intro on who you are and how you became a photographer in the first place.
Well, first, Fred, thank you so much for having me on. My name is Tyson Martin. I'm based in British Columbia, Canada. How I became a photographer. It's kind of a funny story. I became a photographer through my oldest daughter. She was a photographer all through school. I loved seeing her work. She was going away to Mexico to work in a resort and needed some extra money. So she goes, "Dad, I have a camera. Do you want to buy it?" I had no clue what I'd do with it. So I bought it, thought I'd take some photos of the kids and the dog, watched a YouTube video on long exposure water, and I was hooked. I had to figure it out. So I figured it out, and then 4 days later, I jumped into the Fujifilm realm with the X-T3, and that's kind of my story. So my daughter inspired me to pick up a camera, and now I'm obsessed with it.
That's great. Great story to see that, you know, your kid got you started in photography. Not every day we hear a story like that. So that's very, very cool. And would you say that at first you were kind of exploring a lot of genre, or did you already right from the get go kind of knew what you wanted to tell as a visual story?
I've explored every genre of photography. I started off obviously shooting landscapes with water features because I really liked the look of long exposure in the water. Then I moved over to the wonderful world of wildlife. And that was a whirlwind 2 months of my life that I will never get back. Now I kind of shoot everything. I shoot landscape. I love street photography. I love architecture. I kind of like capturing the moments that are around me. Don't set out with a plan. I just kind of wander and capture whatever is in my viewfinder.
And I think you did mention that the camera, you know, Fujifilm camera, did also inspire you to go out and shoot. So what's the relationship with this beautiful brand that we happen to both really, really enjoy? But for you, what does that camera, that Fujifilm camera, present to you?
The Fujifilm camera, to me, it's more than how I classify other brands. They're just tools. They're very clinical. They don't inspire me to pick them up. But there's something about the tactile feel of the knobs, the color profile of the sensor. I know everybody says that, but it's super true. You know, I shoot everything raw. I currently shoot on the GFX system. And, you know, that actually might be changing tomorrow. And just something about it. I look at the Fuji and I'm inspired to go out and capture life. It just inspires me to shoot. I don't know how to explain it any other way.
Yeah, I can totally relate. And I think when I was on your podcast, we did talk about the fact that what got me into Fujifilm was literally the first X100. And I had this big Nikon kit, full frame, and the 10 to 24, 24 to 70, 70 to 200. And I went to a trip in Italy in 2012, and I ended up shooting probably 80% of the shots with the Fujifilm, because two things. The first one is that it was with me because it was small, compact, and I always had it on me. And secondly, it was inspiring to shoot, to your point. So the look and feel, the shooting experience, and so on and so forth. So I can totally understand why you're drawn into these type of cameras. But GFX, man, you made a big shot. Are you shooting street with a, I don't know if we can call it large format or medium format, but a large sensor in the street with a GFX camera? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, I shoot with a GFX 50R and the 6328. Those are that's my go-to setup. For now, there's some things in the works that are not quite signed yet, but we will touch base on that at another time.
Perfect.
But I love it. I have a love-hate relationship with the GFX line. I love it because the sensor is amazing. The camera is just fun to shoot. there's just no point in autofocus on a 50R.
Yeah.
If you're hoping to capture something quickly, this GFX, the old school GFX line isn't for you. It slows you down a lot. And I just found, like, even trying to run, electronic shutter on it, there's a delay. So you have to hold it still for longer. So I've stopped using the electronic shutter. The images are incredible. You know, they're something to actually write home about. They're just that impressive. But if you're looking for something that people will give you the look for, something a little different, be out on the street shooting with, the GFX will definitely do that.
I can see that. And I think it is the only, I'll call it quote unquote, rangefinder style GFX system on the market currently, right?
It is. It's unfortunate they discontinued it, but maybe we'll get lucky and they'll release a version 2 of it.
I agree. Would be more than interested to trying that out. We're I guess both interested in Fujifilm, but also into storytelling. So I see that your photography is based on trying to create a very nice narrative in front of the lens. So how do you decide when to click that shutter? What makes you go out and say, you know, yes, it's worth spending time capturing that story that's unfolding in front of me?
Well, like I said, I'm a wanderer. I have a really hard time setting and planning a shoot. ADHD doesn't allow me to focus long enough to worry about it. I'll set it up 6:30, 7:30. The light's going to be perfect. I show up at 10:30, wonder why the light's horrible. But I like to wander, and I use my eyes like a camera. So whatever my eye captures, if it looks cool, whether it's a garbage can in an alley, a random stranger standing on the shores while I'm taking a long exposure of the ocean with the sun rising. As soon as I see something that my brain clicks and goes, that's what I want, I just go after it.
So you're very respectfully. Reactive type of a photographer. So you react to what you see, what you feel, and you go with your intuition. So gut feeling, I guess.
Exactly.
Got it.
It's the easiest way for me to do it. I mean, with wildlife, we used to have to plan in advance. Oh, we're going to go here. We're going to be there for 10 hours looking for an owl. So about 15 minutes into the 10 hours, I was already bored. So I started wandering, looking for funny trees or, you know, turning it into something that I could capture that would keep me occupied for the time we were there.
I understand. So yeah, this is an interesting approach to it, but I guess it leads to the next question, because we both also believe that photography is a way to, you know, almost like to keep sane, to stay sane, you know, like it's a great therapy. It's something that's meditative. So what is your relationship with photography as something that can help with mental health?
So photography is my therapy. I mean, that's plain and simple. My ex-wife unfortunately passed away from a fentanyl overdose, as we have a pandemic of fentanyl overdoses in Canada, worldwide actually currently. And I tried to find ways to make my kids happy, have them understand that it wasn't their fault. Like, this wasn't her fault. She wasn't an addict. It was just one of those moments, and it unfortunately ended up taking her life. And the camera to me was my escape. It was escape from the pain that I saw on my children's faces. It was an escape from my own thoughts. I mean, this person had been my best friend since we were 15 years old. And you know, now that's where it led me into the Life of Feist podcast, where Feist is actually stands for Photography Heals Your Soul. So When I came up with that acronym, like I told you before, there was a fixed gear bicycle brand called Feist in the beginning that I started with my best friend. And then we vowed that one of us would use that name somewhere in our life to make it something. And then this opportunity came, you know, to talk and share stories with people and listen to creative stories, which is another form of therapy for me. I absolutely love it. Like our podcast, I truly enjoyed the time that we spent chatting. But it's like a therapy session. It allows me to get rid of negative thoughts. I love hearing about creatives. I love hearing about how they capture moments. And it just builds a bigger positive community in the photography space.
Yeah, that's so true. And first of all, I'm sorry for your loss for your ex-wife. This is a very touching story, and this is a powerful story too. You know, telling us about the fact that the camera literally helped you cope and you know, to go through it. So that's very powerful story. To go back to your podcast, I think this is really a great example of, you know, community over competition, because the photography space, as we know, if you frequent any of those social media platforms, you'll see that there is a bit of competition out there, and it's not always a nice world. Just, I mean, slightly. Yeah, I've been on YouTube for like, I don't know, 8 years, and I can attest to the very good side of social media and very bad side of social media. But I think, to your point, with the podcast, what it enables you and I guess people like me to do is to get inspired by other people's stories. So walk us through how you actually came with the idea, but also some of the great meetings that you've been able to have since then, since you started it. Because I know it's fairly recent, right? We're at episode 8, I think, is the last one, right?
Yeah, I just launched episode 8 with the wonderful and great Bettina LaPlante. She's a phenomenal portrait artist. And she was a personal close friend of the late, great Elliot Erwitt. So I got to hear stories about how they would hang out and how inspiring he was by promoting a community feel at his photo shoots. So episode 8 is a great one. You know, and what came about in For Life of Vice, is I found during my hard time, with the loss of the ex-wife, I was really good at communicating with all of the nieces and nephews and my own children and sharing stories of my own personal experiences growing up, to just kind of give them a different outlook on the sad moment we're doing. So my goal with the Life of Vice podcast, really, Fred, is to give creatives a space, whether they've got 2 followers, whether they have 10 million followers. I don't look at follower count. I look at story. I've had a local kid here in British Columbia named Al Villion. Super cool story, inspired by his father who had passed away, trying to continue a legacy of creation, another GFX street shooter. And then I had Michael Taylor from Seattle, and Zana, his partner. She's an Emmy winner and a photojournalist. And she talked about how she got started in the military shooting photos and how it kind of came over. And Mike is just an overall awesome dude. Like, his story is super cool. Then I've had people like, my buddy Ryan from Calgary. He's a guru with lighting, a portrait master. Episode 4 with Ryan HK. Go listen to that one. And then I've had so many great people. I love that it's so different each story. And it just makes me happy. I'm smiling, whether it's a painful story, a heartfelt story, or just that they just love that camera and they love seeing other creatives be successful. That's fantastic. I do have some big ones coming up. I have a recording date set with the one and only Phil Penman. Can't wait.
Friend of the podcast here too.
Yeah, so inspiring. Love his work. You know, and he's willing to come on and chat with me. I have an upcoming episode with the legendary skateboarder from Pal Prol to Bones Brigade, Steve Caballero. Talk about his music. He's a fantastic musician. He has a band called Urethane. He's an illustrator. Obviously, he's an artist on a skateboard. So my podcast is mainly for creatives. I want creatives. I want all artists to be on. I have an Indigenous carver coming up, episode 9. So that comes out Thursday. So he talks about the Indigenous art story, which is near and dear to me as an Indigenous man. So we're going to work together on a project for some Indigenous communities across Canada. And yeah, man, that's pretty much to sum it up. That's where it is.
Very cool. Very cool. And I don't know if Tyson, if you're a bit like me, but after you record an episode, you know, like the brain is just like activated, and then you want to go out and create something new and being in contact, because after all, we're all humans, right? So regardless if you're, to your point, a big shot, quote unquote, in photography or just somebody who's starting out. It's about the stories. And this is actually why I started the Visual Storytelling Podcast, because I thought that stories were way more important than the gear that we use to tell our stories. And gear is important. I'm in the belief that it is important if it enables you to be inspired and to go out and shoot more and so on and so forth. I think you agree with that. But if you're, again, I don't know if you're a bit like me, but after you record some of those episodes, you get a boost of adrenaline, a boost of creativity. And ultimately, hopefully, the people listening to the podcast will get the same type of feeling.
100%. The response I've got so far, I mean, it's just been over a month. So the last 5 weeks, I've been doing double episodes. And mainly because I had so many people wanting to come on, I recorded so often that I didn't want their information to feel stale. I didn't want them to lose the excitement of their story coming out on the internet. So starting in April, I'm booked all April for recordings. I'm booked most of May and then half of June. So I have a very good lineup of people coming on, some very inspiring individuals. But yeah, Fred, I get so inspired by everybody's story. Hearing their story and them willing to open up and talk about their lives, their hardships, what the camera means to them. Mental health is something we all need to take better care of. We all struggle. We all have our issues. But growing up in my era as almost a 50-year-old man, I was always told just to suck it up. You know, oh, you can't be sad. Just suck it up. Don't worry about it. Just go suck it up. Well, I learned, you know, in my late 30s that all that sucking up did nothing for me but caused me more problems. So now I'm willing. I have an episode coming out with just myself telling my story. And I get right to the nitty-gritty. I tell every good, bad, and indifferent thing that's happened in my life. And I want people to understand, like, I'm here to create a community of helpful people. And in order to create a community where people can be open and communicate, I have to be willing to share my story. So that's what I'm working on right now.
Nice, nice. So please go. I'll put the link down below for the Life of Feist podcast. So I invite everybody, all of our listeners here, to go support Tyson and the team, because at the end of the day, again, we're all in this together. And it's one big family. So I like the fact that we're pushing on that community over competition aspect of photography.
So my favorite hashtag.
Yeah, there you go. So what is your vision for where your art will be in, you know, like 2, 3, 5 years, or do you go day by day? You're like, you know what, tomorrow we have this and that's fine. Or are you somebody who likes to have a longer term vision?
For me, with my stuff is, I like to look at my images as paintings. So my end goal is in 30 or 40 years to have them hanging in museums, to have people actually see them and understand the story, create their own story of what my image tells. So that's my lifelong goal, is to just know that my work will continue on when I'm gone. So my kids can see it and my grandkids can see it and they can go, oh, that's my dad, that's my grandpa. Mm-hmm. You know, that's my legacy and that's what I'm here to do. And I'm not here to rush it. A lot of people want to rush instantly. They get their camera. Okay, I'm a professional photographer, you know. And in some senses, I actually don't like the word professional photographer, because I get paid to shoot photos, but I don't want to be called a professional photographer. I'm an artist first. I'm a photographer second. So let me do my work. You paid me for my work. Awesome. So the professional, non-professional, I feel it categorizes people and kind of turns some people off or makes others feel like they're holier than thou, right? So building this community over competition, where we focus on building a positive community and build a place where everybody gets the same treatment, everybody's fair with each other, everybody is super excited for someone's success. I think that's the way forward in this community now. You know, and it's working. It's working for me. You know, as we discussed earlier, I did get a good partnership with the podcast now. I don't know if I'm allowed to shout them out on yours, but...
Oh, of course. There's no restriction.
I just signed a partnership with Hobo Lights for the remainder of the year. They're going to light my studio. So they're going to light all my videos, all my photos. And as a smaller creator that just started, to have a company like Hobolite willing to step up and be like, we love your vision. Let's go. We're on board. That inspires me to push harder. It inspires me to reach out and share more stories. And even your listeners, Fred, if you guys have a story and you want to share it, hit me up. Doesn't matter what your follower count is. I want to hear your story.
Cool. And I invite everybody to do it. I was on Tyson's podcast and it was a really great experience. Speaking of inspiration and having, you know, people sharing stories, any photographer out there or non-photographer or just artist in general that inspires you day in and day out in this day and age in 2024, somebody that you cannot get enough of, you know, books or watching videos or looking at their images, who inspires you?
I've got a few different ones. One of my biggest inspirations currently is, not even currently, from the beginning was Fred Herzog. Strictly like the way he captured the moments on the street, that's exactly how I like to shoot. And how can you doubt anybody who shoots Kodachrome? I mean, come on. Another, I'm a huge skateboard fan, lover, lifelong rider, Grant Britton. His book Push is phenomenal. Grant, quit dodging me and come on my podcast. Greg Girard from Vancouver. He does these series of books. So I've got his Vancouver one, and it shows Vancouver back when it was a working town. So 70s and 80s, before it got all glitz and glammed and, you know, $10 million penthouse condos and stuff. So back when the blue collar man ran the city, and that reminds me of all the time I spent in Vancouver as a kid. Those are my big ones, but I mean, like Robert Frank, absolutely incredible. Bruce Gilden, absolutely love him. John Free is another one that, man, I see his work when he worked with the hobos and the trains in LA. Absolutely love it. As far as painters go, there's Jean-Michel Basquiat. Love his work. Andy Warhol. Anything that's kind of out there and crazy, I love it. You know, there's indigenous people. There's Brandon Gabriel. He's one of my favorites. Even though he's my friend, his work is phenomenal and inspiring. Roy Henry Vickers. I showed you that photo that I took of Siwash Rock in Vancouver that was inspired by him.
Yeah.
And then we've had some interactions. He's actually going to be a guest on the podcast as well. That's who I look at. And then, you know, there's my wife. She's a super talented singer, drummer. My oldest daughter is an amazing fashion photographer, at Brianna Johnson Photo. That's my muse right there. You know, every time she touches a camera, something inspiring comes out.
Nice. So your daughter that inspired you to start photography in the first place, right?
Yeah. And I don't even hold it against her that she shoots Canon.
Oh my God. She's allowed to have that in the house, Tyson?
No, she lives on her own.
Okay. Nice.
It is an R5, so I mean, I guess I can let it go.
Yeah. I mean, you can actually, have her lend you the camera for video if you want. I heard it's not bad for video, the R5.
Well, there we go.
So you did speak about Fred Herzog. That's such a great example of, you know, somebody that yes, is recognized as a master of photography, but not enough. Like, I feel like his work is in the shadow of, like, I don't know, the Joel Meritz and the Robert Frank, to your point, like that are the uber masters of photography. But for me, Fred Herzog, I was on the My Five show on YouTube, and I got invited. That was one of the first photo that was part of my top five, is the one with the guy with the thing on his
the bus stop.
Exactly, at the bus stop with the old lady in the back. Like, that for me, this is just like pure storytelling, untouched scene that just happens and it will never happen again, but it did happen on that corner of that street and he did capture it. So for me, that's just a master shot. And of course, to your point, Kodachrome helps with that, those vibes. But I always tell my girlfriend, like, back then nothing was vintage. Like, these images were just current. It's like if we take a shot at the corner, I don't know, like here in Montreal, in St. Catherine Street, and there's these cars that are current and these signs that are current. So I wonder how back then it was perceived when people, I don't know, from Vancouver were looking at those photos of Fred just hanging out in the city. That's right. Always a thought that goes through my mind.
I love that photo that you just mentioned. My actual favorites, there's a gentleman, you see him from three quarter behind. He's wearing a suit with a hat, and it's got the big lit up display above him.
Oh, yeah. That's
my absolute favorite. I actually searched every used bookstore in North America to find his Fred Herzog photographs book.
Yeah, I'm wondering which one I have here. I think it's... No, it's not that one. Yeah, it's another one.
I've got them all now.
Nice. Any plans for you to also have some sort of a zine or a book or something like that? Is that something you're looking into?
I would love to do. I'd love to do a coffee table style book, so something a little bigger than standard that that's prominent on people's coffee tables. But right now, my main focus is the podcast.
Yeah,
it does take a lot of time to secure the guests, get the guests on, get recording set up, get the editing done, and get them scheduled to come out. Talk to them and make sure that they're happy with the recording. Because not only do I want to be comfortable and know that I'm putting out the best product that I've been able to produce at this point, but I want them to know that I didn't alter the story. The story is shared in their words. So that's something that I feel that kind of sets my podcast apart, is I don't ask a ton of questions. So I come in with some filler questions or comments. But I really wanted to create a platform where people could come in and tell me their history. Tell me what got you started, what gets you excited. Let's build a story base. And then we talk about things like, mental health and creativity. And then we also talk about how important it is to build how important it is to build a positive community within all creative spaces. You're positive with people, life just gets better.
Yeah, that's a very good advice for anybody trying to generate more positivity in their life. Be positive yourself, and we know it's hard sometimes. But again, there are ways to cope with difficult situations. Photography is one of them. Might not be your thing; it might be another thing. But there's always a way to attract this type of positivity by being super positive yourself. And again, we know it's something that's not given to everybody to always be positive, and we're not always positive. I'm sure yourself, Tyson, you're not always positive and high-fiving people in your house every day, but ultimately the goal is to bring as much positivity as we can. And for me, photography is a great example of, if I'm having a bad day, I just go out with the camera, come back, and all of a sudden everything is more calm. Everything is more, things are in perspective. It's not as bad as it was before the photo walk, as an example. So I highly encourage you, anybody, to try it out. It's pretty pretty meditative.
It definitely is. And I don't hide anything from anyone. I mean, I suffer from depression and anxiety and all those fun things. Like, I have days I can't get out of bed, but I've learned over the years that one foot in front of the other, I deal with my day, whether I take a photo or not. You learn to cope with the things that have you down. And I try to be as positive as I can. I have my moments where it's not a positive situation. Life doesn't feel very good at the moment. But at some point I pick up a camera, I'll do something silly with it. I'll take a photo of, a pebble on the ground. All I need to do is have that actuation of the shutter. And then my creative brain starts to click. And then I just start wandering and I start laughing, and you kind of forget about what's got you down. So it really helps me. I mean, I'm on the phone with people all day long at work. I come home and, multiple nights during the week, I'm on a podcast recording with someone. I'm lucky to have a very supportive partner and kids that really believe in my goal and my end vision, which is to, make something of the podcast and my art and share it with the world.
Yeah, that's a very positive ecosystem you're creating for yourself and for your family and ultimately for the rest of the community. It's funny how communities have grown so fast on social media over the past 10 years, but we feel so alone sometimes on those platforms. So platforms like your platform, hopefully my platform, can bring people together in a more genuine way than always trying to show the best side and the best photos and my best self on Instagram or any other platform. And it's nothing against those platforms. They have a place, and some people find work through those platforms. Some people find even their partners through those platforms. And some people also get inspired by it. I'm one of them, but I will say this. The level of inspiration in conversations like the one we're having right now versus infinite scrolling, after 10 years, I think we're more savvy on that front. We don't get sucked up, hopefully, as much as we used to. And I even have a full episode, and I encourage people to go back in the catalog that talks about, you know, social media. And I have a point of view on it, and it's 2 years old now, but it's still, I think, super relevant. Actually, more than ever. But what's your relationship with social media? I'm interested to learn more, because every time I speak to different people, different points of views. So what's yours?
Well, to me, social media is a necessary evil in the creative space. I lecture high school classes, photo classes. So I do a lot with our fine arts school here. I go in and I just speak about pitfalls of social media. You know, to me, I have nothing against influencers. They've found a niche and they've made it happen for them. And man, I will applaud that till the end of time. But I look at the world as an artist. So one of my questions always when I start is, would you rather be an influencer or an artist? An influencer finds their niche, gets it in quick, you know, makes a living fast. Or would you like to see your work in 30 or 40 years be inspiring and uplift the next generation coming up? I always choose to be an artist. To me, social media is a fun place to go on. I have a great time on Threads. There's a great community of positive people on there. I don't worry about follower counts. I don't worry about likes. In fact, I'll turn all that stuff off if I can. I just share what I like, whether it's one photo or if I took 18 bangers, I'm posting 18 photos. It's just the way it works. Not worried about algorithms.
Yeah,
you can drive yourself crazy thinking about all the small details. So I found a group of people, you yourself included, that are very much about building a community. Mm-hmm. And man, you know, you post a photo, I make sure I give that little click, I leave a comment, just to let you know, man, hey, I appreciate your work. I see it. That's amazing. You know, and that's, I've met so many amazing photographers in the last 6 months on Threads than all of my time on any other platform. Besides original Twitter.
Yeah.
Original Twitter was phenomenal. Whatever it's called now, I haven't been on in years. So
it's changed, Tyson. It's changed, I can confirm.
I've heard.
Certain guy in a rocket. Anyways, let's not go there. But so that very interesting, because I think social media for me has become a communication platform. There would be no episode with Phil Penman on this podcast, the Visual Storytelling Podcast, if it wasn't for Instagram. I reached out, we had a nice conversation, and a couple weeks after, he was on the podcast. So that's the power of, you know, these global platforms. The reach is incredible. The level of access we now have is great. What I don't appreciate about Instagram, as an example, is the fact that some people are spending a lot of time trying to build a presence. But for me, it's an embassy. You don't control your presence on there. You're better off creating your website and your podcast. And YouTube is a bit of a different category, because you can build something very unique on YouTube. But on Instagram, if the algorithm changed, which it did, because it now favors reels and videos and less photos, then you don't control that. So I think for me, that's my relationship with social media. And also, it's not saying to infinite scroll. And I see my kids sometimes going there, and I try to educate them. I don't say, don't do that, it's bad. But I'm saying, hey, here's a couple key points that you might want to know about long exposure to screens or just infinite scrolling until the end of time. So that's I think we share that vision about social media. But it's hard, because can you, here's the twist, can you be an artist in 24 and beyond without being on those platforms? I know some of them that exist, but usually they were big before the boom of social media. So can you still be an artist in 24 if you are not sharing your work on those platforms?
Well, I think you can for sure. But most of those people are focused on galleries or museum. Yeah. They create a following in a different genre. There's a lot of people nowadays that aren't even on social media. They've removed it. You know, in the early days, all I did, you know, you get a run and you get 30 or 40 notifications of likes and you get excited. You get that dopamine hit and you're just like, oh man, this is going to be the one. And you're just super excited for it. But then your next photo gets one or none. And then people start to belittle themselves.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I'm not worth it. I shouldn't do this. And there's really no reason, because art is a solo adventure.
Mm-hmm.
As cool as it is to have people like or comment or tell you how much they love your work, which even to this day, like I get those messages all the time and it feels so good to get, but it's not my priority. My priority is to put my work out, enjoy the work I put out, look at it, you know, 3 or 4 weeks later and still be excited for the way that image turned out. And build my podcast platform so I can share more stories and just enjoy positive outlooks in social media.
Yeah.
So yes, there is a way to be successful, but you can be successful quicker by building a following on social media for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, Tyson, we're approaching the end of the conversation, but I want to open it up, for a last point, which I think is an important one. It's a question that doesn't have a right or wrong answer, but for you, what makes a good image when you either take one or look at one?
A good image to me is when I see it either on the back of my camera, on my computer screen, or someone else has it printed on the wall. I'll give an example of the school that I went and lectured at. They did a whole project that brought me in with images based on my lecture. And I walked through each image with each kid who took the photo. And I would tell them, you know, I'd say, okay, well, what does this image say to you? And then it was really neat because we would have a lot of the same opinion. So I think any image that I can tell my own story by seeing is a quality image. It makes me exciting, or makes me excited. And that's kind of how I do it. I look at back of my screen and man, I have those yes moments all the time. There's moments where I look at the screen and you get giddy like a 4-year-old because you're like, I nailed it. Then you get home and realize nothing's in focus. And well, that's just the way it works. But, you know, it's just that excitement. If the image tells a story, that's all I care about.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is that it needs to make you feel something. It has nothing to do with sharpness or depth of field or whatever the technical term you're looking for. At the end of the day, if you feel something, look at an image. As a matter of fact, some of the best images, I mean, you did mention Robert Frank, and I would throw in Sol Leiter, one of my favorite photographers out there. And man, most of those photos are not sharp, you know, like, and we get crazy with these analysis of critical sharpness and micro contrast. And so, dude, if the image makes you feel something, it's a good image. I like that answer because it's not dependent on any piece of gear. It's not dependent on any way of shooting or rule of third or whatever the rules in photography. It's about making people feel something. That's why I love documentary photography. I'm not good at it. I want to get better at it. I want a long-term project that I can invest and building and growing my craft. But I appreciate when people do it right. This is why I love World Press Photo. Every time I go there, every single image is charged with a vibe or with a story, whether sad or something that makes you smile. And you feel something when you look at those images. And it can be that, you know, very complex image or something just in the street, very simple. Both can make you feel something. But I found that documentary photography is so, you're so connected to the image when you look at it that I'm craving more. I want to see more of that. And this is something that evolved for me because I don't know for you, but the images that I liked 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and today, yes, there is a common thread, but at the end of the day, they've evolved and my taste has evolved, just like, I don't know, for wine or for food and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've definitely, I tell my wife often, we, before work, we'll throw YouTube on with a documentary or something playing of legendary photographers. And I always say I was born in the wrong era. Because there's just something about the way they captured their stuff. And one of the things I always say is rules are meant to be broken. And everybody is way too worried about clinical sharp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at the greats. Look at some of, you know, Bruce Gilden's work. Look at Saul Leiter. Look at Joe Marowitz, Robert Frank, Fred Herzog. Look at these people. And a lot of times their images are not tack sharp, but their image tells a story. Whether it's heartbreak, happiness, you know, or just a fun moment, they capture it all so well that they don't worry about the tack sharpness. And I think that's something that has led a few people awry in the photography industry lately. My favorite thing to do is adapt vintage lenses to my Fuji cameras and then just shoot. If I get it, awesome. If it's not in focus, I can still make something from it. It's an artistic piece and that's fantastic. That's all I need.
So you're going for character versus clinical sharpness. I love it.
Exactly.
Good stuff. So Tyson, where would you direct people first? The podcast, right? So where can they find it online?
So it's The Life of Feiss. So it's Feiss is Phys. It's on Apple Podcasts. It's on Spotify. It's on Amazon Music. It's on CastBox. Every platform I could find to get it on, it's on. You know, Threads and Instagram is at LIFE.OF.PHYS. So that's for the podcast. If anybody wants to share a story, it's just Tyson@lifeoffice.com. That's a good one. My personal Instagram and Threads is at Tyson Martin. Very simple. It's just my name. I'm always up for a conversation. You're having a hard time, please reach out. I have all the time in the world to help you through it. I'm not a therapist, but I've been through some stuff, and I'm willing to share my story and talk to you and just give you a shoulder to talk to, whatever you need. I'm here.
Well, thank you so much, Tyson. This was a very interesting conversation, and thank you for that openness. Thank you for being so generous in the way you talked about yourself, the community you're building, your photography, and also just, you know, I feel that this is the first of many conversations. Actually, the second conversation we're having, but the first of many conversations that we'll be having in the future. And if you like what you're hearing, please don't forget to give this podcast a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to your podcast. And I am Fred Ranger. You can find me at Fred Ranger on all the platforms. And also, this is the Visual Storytelling Podcast. Don't hesitate to share it with your friends if you think that somebody might be interested in hearing it. So, Tyson, again, thank you so much. And I wish you a very pleasant reminder of your week.
Oh, thank you, Fred. Should we let them in on the secret that there might be a Fred and Tyson podcast coming up, The Battle of the Voices?
I think you just did.
I know you edit the way I need to. Man, thank you so much for having me on. I truly appreciate it. You know, before I met you, I was a fan of your work. Now you're a friend. I look forward to coming to Montreal or you coming out here and us just going and shooting photos and just having a good chat. I mean, you know what? We're friends now, so that's just the way it works.
Absolutely, man. Let's make it happen. So thank you so much. And thank you, sir. I wish everybody a great remainder of the day. Cheers.